When Joy and I were in Dublin for the Global Leader Forum, it was just loud and clear that a marker excellence of every single chapter had a focus on the core competencies and credentialing and awareness around the core competencies and credentialing. So welcome to Carly Anderson today. The Target Approach, she demystifies the ICF core competencies, and she's going to share 10 of the characteristics of the MCC skill level. And this is just so exciting to be always plugged into this. And if I know anything about Carly, I know that she absolutely lives and breathes the core competencies. So Carly, welcome. And then just for some home, housekeeping is that please stay on mute, and then we will have opportunity for you to ask questions, and Joy will facilitate that portion. So feel free to chat and ask questions as Carly goes through here, and we will definitely want an interactive session today. So welcome, Carly, and it's all yours.
Thank you, Connie. It's lovely to be here. Joy, did you want to say anything before we get started?
No, I guess the only thing I would say is that it was remarkable for me when Connie and I approached Carly, and just listening to how Carly brought us into visioning what this session might look like, I knew that I was in another level of greatness. And so I'm very eager to see how this all evolves. Thank you.
Thank you, Joy. A lot of pressure.
Yeah, no, not a thing. You go, girl.
Well, the other thing is, Connie reminded me it was 5 years ago that I spoke in person at the ICF Arizona chapter. I think 5 years or so ago. Patty Thorne invited me when she was president there. So that was an honor. And I'm just really delighted. I spoke for another chapter last week, and I've been asked to speak for another chapter, and I haven't spoken for any ICF chapters for about a year, and all of a sudden I'm on the ICF chapter speaking thing, and I'm delighted always to give back to my community. I've been coaching now for 21 years, and my journey really toward the ICF core competencies started in 1999. I got my first credential. Anyway, 2001, I got my PCC. 2004, I got my MCC. And then 2005, I was invited to be an ICF assessor. And that's when I started learning about the core competencies, which was really sad to say. But back then, the core competencies weren't as well taught in coach training as they are now. It's evolved, thankfully, since that time. And one of the things that really struck me was how little I knew about the core competencies. And being an assessor, we had to study them and learn them so that we could assess them clearly. Wow. And out of that, that's where my learning journey started. And I don't know why it's never stopped. I'm still always curious about the core competencies. And so I never planned to become an expert on the ICF core competencies. It's really my curiosity and my desire to learn and grow my capacity as a coach, first of all, to be the best coach I can be for my clients, that has allowed me to continue to view the core competencies as a vehicle to growth. And I certainly continue to see the growth in myself by understanding the nuances. The PCC markers are great. And most recently, many of you may know, I do engage quite heavily with the MCC assessing community because I'm passionate about standards and fairness. And I want us, if you're going for your MCC, to have assessors that are professional and aligned. And so for the last few years, I've had the great gift of being part of that calibration and making sure all us MCC assessors have a place to talk and discuss the competencies and the key skills evaluated. And so I just want to let you know that it's just part of my life. I So when Connie says I live and breathe the core competencies, I don't think of it that way until Connie said that. And it is, it's really so much a part of my life. And this morning I just led my MCC mentor coaching group and they're in their fifth week. And we have a client for three sessions. And this is the first day with this one client. She's French, out of Paris. And she's a leader in a large global organization. And just the gift of hearing other coaches coach and us debriefing and the learning and just the privilege it is to listen to coaching. So I feel like we are just so honored as coaches in the world to be able to be together, to learn together, grow together. And I'm very much a part of the global community. I'm very touched by people in the Middle East. I have clients there and in Russia and in Eastern Europe who all want the same things we do. They're all here to grow and learn and be the best they can be so that they can make a difference in their communities. So don't underestimate the power of what you do as coaches every single day. And I feel it is our privilege and maybe responsibility, although I don't really think, I don't know what the right word is, to continue to become the best coach we can be. To be as congruent as possible with coaching skills, because coaching skills are super, super, super powerful. Super powerful in changing the world. I'm not a kumbaya person, by the way. I mean, I'm not into world peace. what do I want for the world? World peace. But I do believe each one of us, if we bring peace to ourselves, if we look at ourselves and our own humanity, that's where the gift is. That's what we can bring to the world, because it's from there and our presence that emanates out to everybody, whether it's somebody in our personal life or when we're coaching or consulting or whatever we're doing. I didn't know I was going to say that, but that's what came out. Thank you for all being here today. I do have slides, but I want to pause for a moment. And one of the things that struck me was centering that Connie did with us at the beginning. And I just want to comment on centering. Because one of the things that is important for us as we grow our skills as a coach, doesn't matter whether you're at the beginning, the middle, or higher levels of competence, is you can always be working on your presence. So for a moment, I just want to ask you to touch something deliberately, whether it's the desk, chair, something that you else, but just deliberately notice your connection to that object. Notice what's happened to your attention. And as you've done that, what now is present for you in terms of what you're noticing in your body? If you can put yourself on mute, if you're not currently speaking, that would be great. Thanks. Yeah, and notice, I mean, what are you noticing as I just said that? What have you just love to hear? Please know you can come off mute at any time. Can someone mute Janet's line? Yeah.
So yeah. Cynthia, do you want to unmute and share?
I can do that. I was just going to say, I think you become more focused. I touched my stapler and I really was focused rather than looking at everything around my space.
That's a powerful stapler.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Anyone else?
Yes, I'll add, this is Andrea. I noticed that when I put my focus on that, it quieted my mind so that I noticed that like my eye was twitching. And so because my mind was quieted of the thoughts, I could notice more of what was going on in my body.
Pretty amazing. Just one little shift in focus by touching something. Yeah, thanks, Andrea. Anyone else? Yeah.
This is Jeff. I just add that it's kind of like a variation of focus, but there is a different kind of connection from focusing and connecting here to connecting somewhere else. And it was obvious that there was a shift there from a connection standpoint.
That's a key word, connection. Yeah. Connection is so important. What are we connected to? Where are we connecting from? Because most of us are connecting from the eyebrows up, so to speak. Metaphorically, it's the head. I like being in my head, by the way. I love being productive. I love it. However, when I'm connected more to my whole self, I have more access to being with all the information that I'm getting about myself and what I might be getting about the environment and the person, if that's my client too. Now that Andrea, did you want to say something?
Yeah. I noticed a little bit embarrassingly that as I was holding this water bottle and feeling it and focusing on it, I was not really paying attention to this class.
That's good. Interesting. There's nothing to be embarrassed about that. It is what it is. I mean, this to me is, I've got this little beanbaggy thing. I like it. I actually have it on my desk all the time. And sometimes I'm just really attached. Feels good. Yeah, but that's just noticing where your attention goes. And it's important for us as coaches to be present to our attention and what we're paying attention to and what we're connected to. Yeah, that's what I want to say. I have given Connie and Joy permission to interrupt me at any time and to add anything. That's not what I wanted to share, my desktop. For any of you, if you have questions you want to ask or participate, I really want you to participate. I have a presentation of sorts. I played around with it 10 times in the last 2 days, but it's really minimal. I really want to talk to it and be with you. And if you have any questions, any moments, anything that you absolutely want to make sure I covered that is not being covered, please put it in the chat or bring it forward. I'm going to send after this a copy of my PDF of my slides. Can you see this? Give me a nod if you can see this. Good. Okay. Welcome from my heart to yours. Thank you for being here. There's many things you could be doing with your time right now, and appreciate you coming for some learning and whatever community. Yes. Okay. I just wanted to let you know what I'm drawing on. Connie gave you a little bit about it, but these are the things that I draw on. I mentioned I have a mentor coaching group program, and this morning already for me, some of you, thank you. Somebody called in from Sweden. I saw, thank you for being here. I had clients from the Middle East this morning in my class, Belgium, Finland. So I draw on 36 groups, mentor coaching groups, which is ICF approved for advancing the professionalism of coaching through ICF core competency development. And I know that part of today is why get your credential. If you already have an ACC, why get your PCC and why get your MCC? And I can talk to you about some of the experiences I've had and others have, and also the money that the things that became available to me that I didn't even know would become available as I went through the NCC school level at least. And then my husband and I have a corporation, Full Being Coaching, dynamic looking, that's our logo. I like it because who you are makes a difference in what you do. And that's really where we come from. And it's about the person, humanity. We are in the privileged position of working with a human being or human beings who want more. And my belief, we all want to be our best version of ourselves. We all want to be appreciated and acknowledged and seen and be happy. We all want to be happy. I think so. And then I've developed this product a number of years ago and I keep rethinking, I've got to update it, and I listen to it again and go, there's nothing more I can add. But it's called the Target Approach, and I'll talk a little bit about some of that, a few bits of that today, demystifying the ICF core competencies. So how did the ICF core competencies really work? What are the core or target of competencies? If you focus on those, that can really make a difference to your coaching skills and therefore to your clients. And then I've written this other product called 10 Characteristics of NCC Skill Level. And we've started to unpack a few of those already. Connection is one of those. Presence, spaciousness are a number of them. There's an article, you can actually, without even buying the product, you can get the 10 skills by going to the product page, and you'll better get to the blog article. Anyway, so that's what I'm drawing on from today. And this is a little bit, I mean, this is essentially the three bullet points I've pulled out of that the cat and I are going to cover today. Very wise cat. Deepen a little your understanding of the core competencies and some mindset shifts from ACC to PCC to NCC. Credentialing in the business case. Why is that important to have a credential? The value of coaching versus defaulting to other comfortable hats. And I call it the spotlight. Where is the spotlight? Because we all wear different hats, consulting, training, teaching. I certainly don't just do coaching and never have just done coaching for my 21 years since I started my coach training. And I'm sure that's the same for probably nearly every one of you. So that's the lay of the land. Again, anytime Connie or Joy, you want to add anything or someone has something, then let me know. But I'm just going to start and I'm going to stop my slides in a moment. I'm just going to give you this first piece. Here's the 11 core competencies. They're a list, step by step. When I first became an assessor, I told you in 2005, I started to study them and realized that's not how they, you don't start at step one and go to coaching group and then trust in presence, listening. It's not how it happens. In fact, what I realized, and this is from my mind, but it's not official from the ICF, but I just wanted to show you that the target, I call these the target competencies, as if you have an archery target, and right in the middle is our presence, which we've already been focused on in this session. From Connie starting the centering, to me asking you to notice one thing, something to put your hand on, and how and where your presence is. Our presence is informed by ethics. We need to know that ethically for us, we're in a coaching presence versus a consulting, therapy, teaching, mentoring, or parent presence. And in order to be present, in a coaching frame, we always need to be aware of which hat we're wearing. And I feel like that's important for clients that I'm coaching, especially in the organizational context, because they often take what I do as coaching and model that. And if I'm modeling something else and not using my coaching skills, but are instead modeling the presence of a mentor, I'm going to call that out in myself. So the first thing is, do I know what coaching is? And then presence is a whole bunch of stuff. It's what's going on inside of us as well as what is going on outside of us. So what are we present to noticing in ourselves? And that's why simply putting your hand on something will shift your attention. because now you're present in a different way. And then active listening comes from your present. What you listen for comes from what you're present to. And then what your listening informs your questions. And then also the other thing is questions, other than questions, we have observations and comments and intuitions. And direct communication is also metaphor, visual. Metaphor is a very direct form of communication, moving into client realm of metaphor. So often we talk in terms of visuals. This morning, the client on my mentoring group, she's a leader in a large company, and she talked about what she wanted was to open the windows of her mind or the panes of her mind. There it is. Straight away, the client was giving a visual, a metaphor that the coach could work with. What would it be like? What would be different if you had those panes open? What's closed? What's dirty about that pane? I mean, there's so many things you can craft from their questions from, and metaphor is just a beautiful way to go, or visual language. So that's, first of all, the target. I just wanted to ask you first, what questions or thinking has that already brought to you about presence or how to listen? What's percolating already for you? Love to hear.
So, Carly, regarding presence, how do you recommend and how do you get ready for a coach call? Because I know as coaches, we're sometimes one after another, and what do you recommend to really get grounded and be present when we have such busy schedules?
Mm-hmm. It's a great question. And whenever the coaches coach in my mentoring groups, the first thing I ask them is, what's your presence practice? Some of them, of course, when I first say that, have none. But now, because I've asked the question as an open-ended question, their brain is going crazy trying to find an answer to that. So I invite you all, what's your presence practice? Great question. Who has one?
I have a practice.
Yeah. Oh, go for it, Andrea.
Well, what I do is so it takes about 3 minutes, and it's actually, I call it get present. And so I go through a process of breathing and then putting my focus in on my senses and noticing what's going on in my body. So I do a little breathing, a little stretching, and then noticing and going through all the different senses and then breathing in a different way and then coming out. And it just puts me present.
Wonderful.
And that's what I share with my clients too.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Lynn.
Yeah. I do presence with my client. So there's a centering activity that I do, you know, sometimes really short, sometimes a little bit longer, just kind of dropping in with breath and, you know, depending on sometimes if I know they have a religious faith, that it'll be connecting to their God. And then I usually, not always, but usually I invite a heart connection between the two of us. And that centers me at the same time that it connects the two of us in individual coaching.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I have one that I've used prior to coaching. Do you want to read that, Joy?
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. That's from Rebecca Gantz. Hello, Rebecca. I have one that I've used prior to coaching. First, I set up the room again for each person. Second, I start to think about the person and their world. Third, I prepare space for them as they are. Beautiful.
Mm. Well, I'll share mine, and I'm going to share that this has evolved over the 21 years. It's evolved a lot, my understanding of presence and how I get present and what I do or don't do with my clients to get present. So this may be shocking to some of you. It may be a little confronting for some of you. So it's not meant to make anybody what you've shared wrong, just to know that this is just what my observation is as we move from ACC to PCC to MCC, and also move from mentoring, teaching, training through to really pure coaching presence. First thing I do, it can take, this is it. My thing is I'm present if I get one conscious breath. All it takes. So if I'm literally moving from one, and it's back to back with my coaching or mentoring or whatever, if I get one breath or touch something, I'm present. If I have more time, like between this morning, I had some more time. I actually, this is not going to probably for some of you, I go and eat a piece of cheese. For some reason, that grounds me. Pepper jack, sliced, whole foods is my preference. That grounds me. The other thing, if I've got more time, walk around the block. It's a 10-minute walk. I get my body moving. So if I have time, 10 minutes. If I don't have that much time, I walk around my house. 2 minutes. If I have less time, I walk to the kitchen, get another cup of vodka, ginger tea. I don't drink anymore. So it's my ginger tea, big ginger tea. And I deliberately take a sip. Whatever I do it deliberately and consciously so I'm in my breath. My other presence practices are Bikram yoga. I sweat like heck in a hot room so that I can be present. It gets me so present and connected. It's a spiritual, mental, physical, emotional surrendering process for me. So I have a multitude of ways. Main thing is consciousness. Am I doing something consciously? If I come to the coaching session present and focused from the very first breath, for me, coaching occurs from the very first breath. Client shows up and they go, hi, client, how are you? And they go, oh, I'm so frazzled. I've just come from another meeting. In that moment, asking them to get centered and present may in fact be an agenda for the coach. Maybe they need to be in that state for a moment and touch that state in order to be able to move through it. So potentially doing a, so that's why I'm saying I'm not making anybody's suggestion what you do wrong. It's just my observation is sometimes we can shift the client out of the place that really is of service to them in that moment to be present with where they are. So if we're present and connected and we can be fully in the moment, we can be with our client in that moment and really be with them where they are. If a client shows up really, really frantic, let's say, and talking like, I've just come, oh, I'm here, I'm finally here. Then instead of going, let's do a centering, which to me is more of a training exercise. We're now in a coaching, but that's just my opinion. When we actually do a centering exercise with a client, if the client brings the interest, wants to do it, for instance, if we invite the client, say, how would you like to start our session today? And they say, I'd like to get a glass of water. Or I'd like to just take a moment to breathe. Or, you know, that centering exercise we've done in the past, coach, I'd love to do that now. All right, client, how would you like to do that? Okay, you just lead it. That to me is that's being present and connected to your client and using coaching versus a training or teaching. And I was taught the same thing in my coach training a long, long time ago. But as I've evolved in my understanding of from taking presence, what is presence and how do I really trust and partner with my client? This type of starting a session, I'm very, very present to how the client is showing up. So if the client, are you feeling? I might ask that. I'm not a feeler, but I might ask. If they are a thinker, I might deliberately ask how you're feeling right now. If they can't answer it, I don't care. But I'm just noticing how they respond. Or I might ask them, what would you like right now? Sounds like you've come from a frantic place or another meeting. What do you need in this moment in order to be ready for our session? Or that may be, they say, well, I need to talk about. Sometimes coaches say, well, the client isn't ready to be coached. No, the coaching happens from the very first breath. How the client is showing up is the coaching. So if your client shows up and they're already, something's going on and they're not present, or they're more present to something that's just occurred in their personal or professional life, and they don't know what they want to be coached on, because in truth, they are right in this moment, wherever they are. We need to be with them wherever they are. That's the coaching moment. Let me pause there for a moment and ask, what is this evoking in you? You don't have to agree with me, by the way. Never believe anything I say. Just try things out for yourself. And if it works, great. And if it doesn't, great. But what is this evoking in you? Thoughts? Concerns?
Well, you know, this is Connie Kadansky. So sometimes I'll have a client say, okay, I'm pulling into this parking lot and I'm going to be sitting under a tree. And I mean, I'm here in Arizona and I'm thinking that has to be hot. That's the last place in the world that I'd like to be. But I mean, sometimes it is what it is. So when you're saying this, I mean, because I often am so uncomfortable when people share with me that. And so what I'm hearing from you, that I just need to get present with my own world. And as long as they're comfortable, that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great to check on their comfort. How are you feeling about being under a tree right now in Arizona in 110 degree heat, which is probably not what they do. I have had clients do that as well, by the way, on the side of the road. And they've said, no, I'm totally fine. I'm present. This is the exact place. Or they go out to their car because they can't be in the company environment. They don't feel safe enough to speak openly. So they go out to their car and they go, no, I've got all the windows down. Everything's fine. Or I put the window, I'm now, it's all fine. I'm in the middle of winter. I had somebody in Minnesota do this. Snowing. And I go, I'm absolutely fine. So yeah, check in with ourselves about what we are uncomfortable with. And that's the presence piece. That's what we become present to and go, oh, I'm feeling uncomfortable. But that's their experience. If the client says, no, I'm really fine, and then we want to still make them do something different, that's about us. Yeah.
Thank you.
Really nice.
Anyone else want to share? Jeff?
Carly, this is Jeff.
Yeah.
From everything you've said thus far, really the theme that keeps coming back to me is the focus on being versus doing.
Yeah.
Both for ourselves as a coach, but then also our service to the client is really to help them sort that out. And that's been a theme for me. I read Parker Palmer's book on A Hidden Wholeness, and he talks about Thomas Merton, and Merton is a very deep thinker about, you know, false self versus true self. So I've just been kind of floating around in that space of, well, what does that actually mean to show, you know, how am I showing up? And am I showing up in a true, authentic way that's in service to the client, or is there some mask, or is there something that's tainting that and affecting me and affecting them? So I appreciate you know, all that you've said thus far, because it's just keeping those wheels turning for me.
That all sounds so delicious, Jeff, what you're studying and contemplating.
Hey, Jeff likes Gouda cheese.
Oh, you're a Gouda. Okay, I like Gouda too.
If I were eating cheese right now, I'm trying to stay away from it. But if I were, that would be my go-to.
Yeah, I like Gouda too. Yeah, I go through not eating cheese, but it doesn't seem to affect me. Certain cheeses do. I've found out which ones don't. But yeah. Who do I like to?
I'd also like to add a comment from Jan Ferran out of Southern Arizona. And she is our immediate past president of our chapter. Focus on the client. It is their journey they are inviting us to.
Yeah, that's really nice. And it's an end.
And it's an end.
You know, we're on their journey with them, and we're in partnership, and how we show up and being present to ourselves is important, because how we show up is really sometimes more impactful for the client than what we say. I remember a client I was coaching who told me that, who said that, I've been observing you and how you've been asking the questions, and the fact that you slowed down, and by the way, the fact that you didn't interrupt, I felt uncomfortable. I'm so used to people interrupting me all the time. In fact, actually, one person told me when I was doing a chemistry meeting a few years ago, she said, you're not interrupting me. I'm so used to being interrupted. I said, I'm not going to interrupt you unless there's a really good reason, probably because you're self-deprecating. You're doing something, saying something about yourself, but otherwise I'm going to listen and observe and notice. She says, I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not comfortable with you giving me the space. This is literally what she said. She said, but I now have a vision for myself of where I can go to, but you're not the right coach for me right now. I need someone who's not as spacious as you. But my presence let her know what was possible, and she was honest enough to say, I'm not ready for that. That's pretty cool.
So I'd like to offer something up, Carly.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote down when we started that you were role modeling spaciousness. So you just are, and you're showing up. And so, humbly submitted from Lubeck, who's still working on these inner muscles, I do a breathing kata and I meditate. And I love that in the morning because it grounds me, and I am still learning. However, I also want to embrace this aspirational state that you can be so comfortable in the moment with the spaciousness, and that you, not in a presumptuous way, you just show up this way, and we all can sit back and go, huh, there's an opportunity.
Hmm. Thanks, Joy. Yeah, it's an evolutionary process. We are so busy in our minds. There is so much to, I mean, yesterday I was saying, I was just so overwhelmed, and I'm okay saying that today. I'm overwhelmed with, I have post-it notes. I can't have one long list. I've got like colored post-it notes of to-dos here. There's like green and yellow and blue. That works for me because I can, oh, ICF Arizona PowerPoint. Oh, that one there. I haven't done that one yet. That's there. I've got like seven other things on there. But I can be okay with that. I can actually breathe through that and go, oh, and my husband wants to talk to me. And I say, honey, I'm in overwhelm today, right now. Now's not a good time. He knows that's okay. I just own it. What I used to do is not own it. And when you don't own how you're feeling in the moment, or have that consciousness, you project out onto other people, and you get this negative, this other, you know, it's about the other person or the situation. So this is such an important part of becoming a more masterful coach, is mastering your presence. And to me, it's a lifetime process. Some days I do tapping in the mornings. I don't know if any of you know tapping. I love tapping. I mean EFT work. Some days I do it, and I got this whole process that I do, and then I don't do it for 3 months, and then I come back to it. But I love having all these options for how to get my body present. Before I get out of bed in the morning, I imagine my day, my feeling state. I do a lot of self-nurturing and soothing, careful language about myself. I'm showing up to you guys today. I didn't know what I was really going to talk about. I do. I have a lot of slides, but which ones am I, what am I going to? So I self-soothe. I do that. You're going to show up okay today. Be kind to yourself. These are all things that we don't take time to do. Yet if we do these, there's neuroscience guy named Alan Fogel. I don't know if any of you were on the Coaches Summit last week for Coaches Rising. They're doing a free summit at the moment, and all their favorite speakers out of the Netherlands. They're all Americans, mostly, though. And this guy named Alan Fogel, I don't know what he's written. He's very famous in some realms, I know. But he, I think it was him that mentioned that there's been studies done where your presence is actually now quantifiable as a, that it makes a difference to people. Without you having to say a word, people will trust you or not based on your presence. So if you want to develop deeper trust between you and your client, it's not about the words you say. Sure, it is about what you say, paying attention, but more importantly, it is about how present you are and how grounded and comfortable you are in your own skin as a human being. I'm not perfect, and I don't like being considered a role model, but at the same time, I know I am, and I'm human. I am just learning like you guys. We have until 1 o'clock today or 12:30?
1.
Okay, great.
Can I add something?
Please, Deborah.
Thank you. I noted in the notes that I do a prep form, and I was thinking about it and thinking, so that's a doing thing as opposed to a being thing, which is what I'm hearing you talk about. And yet I also realize, I'm going to just put my video on here for a minute so you can see me. Hi.
Hi.
I also realize that, in fact, I also journal in the morning and I try to meditate, even if it's just for 5 minutes, and I try to do my connection with my sort of my spiritual practice. And that journaling is actually really important to me. And I very often will realize things just in the simple process of writing something down that I hadn't realized before. And so that prep form, I find it's only 2 or 3 questions, 4 questions, whatever. It's how are you today? You know, if you had something you carried from last time we spoke, what was it? What do you want to work on next? And there's also a piece in there about, you know, what are you feeling right now? I do it for my own coaching because I find it really connects me with what am I trying to achieve here? Why am I doing this phone call? Why, you know, I'm busy. Why am I doing this call now? And I offer that to my clients for the same reason, because I think it helps us carve out a space in the day, whenever that is, to reconnect in the same way that journaling does. So I just wanted to kind of offer that. I think that's what you're talking about, is it not?
What? I don't know. That talking about what?
Reconnection, that presence.
Oh, and that's how you do with a prep form?
That's one of the ways I do it, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, again, 21 years of coaching, I have evolved. My church training taught me to do prep forms. And so I did for the first 5 years. If a client didn't send a prep form, I was pretty annoyed. Where's my prep form? So then I started learning that, in fact, I learned more about partnering. As the ICF became more consciously explicit about partnering, and it's in the definition of ICF definition of coaching is coaching is partnering with the client in a thought-provoking and creative process to forward something else. I should remember it by now, but I always know the partnering piece up front. Is that now I partner with my client on what they want and how they want to prepare, what supports them. I have a prep form. You're welcome to use it if you want to organize your thoughts beforehand. Or if not that, you can just show up. That's fine. But what supports you? By the way, I always have a coaching development plan with my clients. I'm only working. So we've already done a coaching development plan. I've got a whole article on that and how I go about that between the what and the who and the how. I can put that in this presentation as a link if you want to, and you can find that. But I do partner with my clients on what they want to do. Just like at the beginning of coaching sessions, I don't assume now how to do presencing the client, that I need to do a centering practice for them. Because it may be that them showing up the way they are. And then also prep form, some clients who are very compliant, they'll use that rather than something else has happened and they're not going to tell you how they're being consistent with what they have, or you are being consistent with what they've. But what if in between sending you that prep form and their coaching session with you, something has happened? Like they've gone to a meeting and just found out that their team is being fired. Just an example from recent. But their team, literally their team is going away and their whole role is about to change. That happens, and yet that wasn't in their prep form. What happens? What do you do?
Yeah, for me, it's not about being wedded to it. It's about offering it as a gift.
And there you go.
Accept it, then great. And if they don't, that's fine too. That it's not exactly. A mandatory, it's a gift. Yeah.
Exactly. That's a beautiful, you use the word offering. So that's the nice thing is when we offer these things, but again, the whole thing is as you grow in your skills as a coach, I'm not saying any of you aren't, I'm just saying what I've noticed for myself is that I'm much more flexible. My toolkit is very, very broad and deep, but I don't just use one thing and one way. Like I worked with a young leader, he was 31. He's the son of the company, the CEO of the company, which is a privately owned $25 billion global company, and he didn't fit the mold of his dad. And he wanted to be himself, and that wasn't okay because dad is as charismatic and as they come. And my client's a 30-year-old. And so we connect. I said, what do you love? And he races around a racing track, these carts and things. Well, I love Grand Prix. So we'd connect over Grand Prix to start with. And then he would ask for some references for things, and I'd say on leadership and that, I'd say, well, what do you like? What sort of things? He said, well, don't ever send me an article or a book. I don't read books. I said, well, how do you like to learn? He says, I love to go onto YouTube and research videos and stuff. I said, well, if you want to find out about leadership, why don't you do that and see what you can find out? He was like, oh, yes. And he came up with this amazing ad for Honda, which was doing something on leadership. So it was in his realm of cars and sport. And he was able to present that to his leadership team. So what he became okay with is permission to be himself. And instead of having to be like his dad, which was what was being told was required by his dad, what we did over the year of our coaching was for him to become really true to himself. And I had to partner with him and let him find what his way was. So I never sent him any articles. I never sent him any books. I never actually sent him anything. He would do all the finding of videos and he'd send them to me. So it's just flexibility and having a range of tools to really be fully partnering, because we get taught these things in our coach training programs and they become the rule. And I want to give you permission to break the rules, to find the ways and to be open to different ways of doing things and being with your client and partner and find out, client, how would you like me? I've got this tool, but I don't need to use it. What works for you? What's your learning style? That's what I have for now. I'm going to go back to my slides, but before I do, any thoughts, questions, comments?
Anything for Carly?
Well, I had a thought. One thing that I just got from what you were saying, what I do with my presencing with regard to my clients is it's an offer as well. I always say it's as voluntary if you'd like to do it or not. And I had been in the practice of doing that every time we meet. Would you like to get present? And they know, yes, no, I don't care. I have no agenda around it. However, I got to thinking, and I do it in my trainings as well. I offer it up and they can decide. But I thought, does that even, instead of saying, how would you like to start the session, which is what you suggested, does that even just making them have to say yes or no, put some kind of pressure on them to, you know, not get disapproval from the trainer, or, you know, even though I don't feel that way, it could be perceived that way. And I've never really thought of that before you mentioned that.
Yeah. That's a nice awareness. It could be because we are in the power position. We are an authority, even though we like to say that we're partnering with our client in a co-creative relationship. They do see us as the authority. So yeah, perhaps maybe experiment with how would you like to start the session today with those clients and see what they do with it. What? You're not going to ask me about that? Or yes, no? Yeah. I mean, I try and keep that open, and I do try and start with a very humanity. I mean, I'm not, it doesn't mean chatty chatty, but the chatty chatty could be the very thing. For example, I had a client who's she's not a CEO of a major company one day. I'll be surprised. It'll be her choice not to, but a very, very smart young mid-30s woman who was being groomed for the next position in a high-tech company. And, as a lot of women do, I apologize. This does sound a little sexist. I'm sorry, but she was doing too much. She was had a four-year-old at home, very supportive husband, but she was still being mother as well as VP, you know, director of a company moving toward a VP, and a very humble woman with major skills, emotional intelligence, smarts, everything. And, she went on a vacation, family vacation, to another part of the country, the US. And so when she came back, I said, "So how was your?" The first thing I said, "So how was your time?" And she was, "Oh, there's a lot going on with the family. We went to see my husband's family, and that's all I'll say." But there was a lot, and so she talked about that. And then I asked her after about 10 minutes of her sharing this, which was not her thing to share anything about the family or her, she was always business. I said to her, "How does what you have shared, how does that affect your leadership or relate?" I think I said, "Relate to your leadership." And she was, "Oh my gosh." There was all these connections. So just by allowing her to talk about her family trip and all the things that were going on, I could tell there was a lot of emotional stuff going on. And part of what she was dealing with her team was a lot of emotions. But I didn't know whether she felt there was any connection or not. I just asked the question, and then wham, all of that learning and noticing about the family thing going on, she was able to translate that into what was appropriate for her to take into her leadership. So never assume that the chat up front is not part of the coaching. Coaching happens in the very first breath, and to pay attention. And if we do something standard at the beginning, perhaps that takes the client out of the moment. I don't know. Nothing is wrong. Everything is possible. Please don't hear me as saying, don't do this and do that instead. Don't believe a word I say. Go try it out for yourself and experiment. That's all I offer for you.
This is Janet Fagan. You made me think of something that happened with a client. It was a vacation story. And we started our call, and she's in the job search, and she started talking about her vacation and how she met all these other couples, and they happened to be business owners. And she started asking them questions and giving them advice. And they said, "You do this for a living, we want to hire you." So it sort of helped her make some career decisions just by being on vacation. And that was part of our initial conversation, was how was your vacation? So very similar to yours. It brought up a lot of other things. And helped clarify for her. She didn't, you know, sometimes other people have to tell you about your talents. You're not always immediately aware of those. And so with all these people asking her questions, and she actually traded cards, phone numbers, and she's thinking about going to consulting because she has a lot of expertise.
That's great. Great story.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jenna.
You're welcome.
All right. I've got my screen up again here. The who and the what. Someone's already mentioned this, the being and the doing. So from mindset shift from ACC to PCC to MCC is how much we shift our attention, our presence, from focusing on problem solving and solving what I call solving the client, and getting our value from being the helper, the fixer, the solver, bringing our expertise. So that's often what happens at ACC, or in that mindset. To ACC, PCC, we're starting to get that, oh, there's a person that has thoughts and feelings, and maybe they know things about themselves, and what do they know about themselves that I call it drawing their self-knowledge out? How can I draw their self-knowledge out? What do they know that they, like on the trip that Janet just shared, someone else said something. Now the client has some knowledge about themselves they maybe didn't have before. That's our role. As we move for more towards MCC, we no longer see the client as having a problem. There's nothing to fix or solve. That doesn't mean the client doesn't bring problems. It's just we don't have to relate from it from a problem perspective. It's like, oh, here's something the client is working with. They call it a problem. I wonder what they can learn from that or what they know about that and how they can use that. Because overall, we want to grow our clients' capacity to solve their own issues and situations and grow their confidence in themselves to be able to access. And rightly or wrongly, sometimes coaches will say to me who I've mentored or clients that I've coached will say, I heard your voice in my head. Carly would say, take a breath. You didn't say that, whatever. But it's that ability to let the client be able to solve their own problems. So it's moving from what, which is much more of a, let me help the client fix this, and my value is in my ability to help the client fix that. And often people come to coaching because they go, well, I'm always the person people come to with advice. Well, that's not coaching. They come to advice. If you listen and help draw out their knowledge, or if you're empathetic, then maybe you're using some coaching skills. Then as we become comfortable with our coaching skills, you've got to go from step one to step two. Step one, you have to know what coaching skills are and practice the basics. The basics then you take to the next level. Just like LeBron James is always practicing. Roger Federer, Naomi Osaka, all these the current number ones in the world, or she's not number one right at this moment, I don't think. Rafa, and you know, all these greats in tennis as well. They're always practicing. They don't just, oh, I'm the best, I'm the greatest, I don't need to practice anymore. So they practice and they keep growing their skills, and then they go to clay, and then they move to grass, and then they move back to hard court, and they're completely different, just like our clients are different. So if we just stay in this, I'm the fixer, I'm the problem solver, versus no, now what's the whole range of possibilities here that I can use? And we move from that it's a very freeing mindset when you no longer have to fix. Your client always wants results, but how you get there is more through helping them to connect with their self-knowledge first and then find out what else they know about themselves. So this is the balance we're always doing, the who versus the what. The little who versus the big who. What is this? Coaching the who versus the what. So here's my owls, my little owls. I call it coaching the little who. Because oftentimes coaches get thinking that the who is just about something, it's everyday life. What do you already know about coaching the who from our conversation today? What is the little who?
The one who thinks that there's a problem?
The one who thinks, oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Well, the little who is, does anyone have any challenges right now with any family members? Just raise your hand physically or say hello, whatever, yeah, if you're not on, yeah. Okay, are you feeling any concern or anxiety or sadness because of something happening to other people around you? Do you feel any happiness or excitement for someone else or something coming up? Is there a vacation coming up for you or an event or something that you're feeling excited about? I mentioned I felt overwhelmed yesterday. These are all the little who, everyday things. Overwhelm is an internal, that's a label for an internal state. I labeled it that because that felt empowering for me. I'm not overwhelmed today. But yesterday I was. Doesn't mean I have any list to do today, but that's how I was feeling yesterday. So I'm okay with that. And so coaching the person on their humanity, what's showing up in the moment, versus some people say to me, coaches say, well, the client isn't ready. What if the client isn't ready to be coached on the who? I go, how can you not coach the person on themselves? I mean, if a client comes to you and says, I'm a leader and I'm having a meeting coming up and I want to prepare for the meeting, that looks like a what? And I will say, well, what about this meeting is different that you want to use our coaching session to prepare for it? Well, it's a new situation for me. I've never presented to this team before. How are you feeling about that? Nervous? Ah, human. Ah, okay. So what is it that you really are seeking to have in our coaching session? I want to feel confident going to this meeting with a team that I haven't worked with before. But if you started coaching around the very first thing they said, you'd be coaching them on a surface level or a what. Dig a little deeper. For instance, another great question is if the client says, well, I've got a new team, not sure how I want to present. You could say, well, how is that impacting you? Or how is that affecting you? So you can ask a question, then they'll go, whatever. I mean, I work only with engineers and tech people and project managers and very highly techy, they're not feely people. And they all have feelings, but that's not the first thing they lead with. But if I say to them something like that, they'll say that. They'll say, yeah, I've never presented to this team. And I'll say, how's that affecting you? They'll go, a little uncertain. If they say uncertain, I'm not going to keep digging for them to say anxious or anything. Uncertain is enough. All right, what would you like to be feeling instead? Well, some level of confidence, or even if I can get to neutral. And if you go, well, what if you are feeling certain? No, that doesn't. It's not about that. It's that whatever their words are. But this is all the who. Every day being with our humanity. And that's what the who is. So let me offer, ask you, of the big who is visioning. Oftentimes coaches often think, well, the who is, what if a client doesn't want to talk about their life purpose or their vision? I go, well, I don't have that very often because they're dealing with their life. So I see them as already whole and resourceful. And they bring in this problem called, I'm leading a new team and I don't know how this meeting's going to go. I assume they have lots of resources already and they know a lot about this, but I'm going to check in with their humanity first. What's going on? Any thoughts, questions that brings to any of you? Maybe ahas?
A quick question, Carly.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that both the big who and the little who are important. So in maybe an engagement with a client, how do you integrate those things? I mean, a lot of us probably typically spend time up front on the big who to try to, you know, figure that out and then work on the little who stuff. But how do you approach that?
Yeah, definitely do a coaching develop. I call it a coaching development plan so that you get the, what are the, why are you here? And that's where the assessments up front could be important data, but out of that, the client needs to use that data to come up with their plan. And their plan for me is usually a who, a what, and a how. So the what is this all in service of? Why are you even here in the coaching? That, you know, what, and if they want to be a better leader, what does that mean to you? How does that look or feel or whatever? And then what are the parts of that that is being given to you in this information called assessments and that? Because the debrief of assessments, I can call the consultative phase or personal interview. That's consultative. Then the creating of a development plan is part of that visioning, which is the client's responsibility. I will coach them through that. You can give them input or observations, but they need to come up with that. Whether it's one page or 10 pages, I don't care. It's whatever they want to do. The form is, what are the you know, what are the things that you want to accomplish or that the company is saying? But now you have to figure out, why is it important for me if the company is saying I need to do that? So then out of that, I say, well, the thing in all of this is you, is if you need to achieve that as a leader, then how are you going to do that? What is needs to be addressed with that? If they're an individual contributor now moving to a team lead, then the relationships, how do they deal with peers, direct reports, superiors, whatever? So that may be part of it, the how they actually accomplish things. And then the who is, how do you feel about giving up responsibility for doing the individual contributor role? So how do you trust people to, how do you do this? This all, if you feel resentment towards somebody because they didn't deliver something to you on time, that's the who. So we're going to, I always let my clients know up front, you're going to do a plan that really, I don't care how you do it, but it's got to address somehow what inside of you do you feel you need to address in order to be able to be the effective leader that you're being asked to be. And that's going to involve others in how you engage with others. And it's also going to involve how you, what you know about yourself, because that informs. If you're feeling resentful towards someone, your behavior is different than if you're feeling trusting somebody. So all of that is up front. But every time a client, in every session, there's an opportunity to do a vision. For instance, if a client comes and says, I want to be ready for this meeting I'm coming. So, okay, in your ideal, how would you show up in that meeting? There it is, in that moment. A bigger picture question, which is part of the PCC markers. There's three questions in there called beyond questions, moving to ideal states. And so that's a way you can use it in any coaching session. How's that, Jeff?
So, Carly, quick question here.
Yes.
So I've kind of shook it out in my head. Is the who is the client's relationship to whatever they're doing, right? Their relationship to their perceived problem or their issue. And that's kind of helped me in a roundabout way to get deeper to the who. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, my dear colleague, Fran Fisher, who's an MCC, who you might want to have sometime in your ICF Arizona. She's also a fellow MCC assessor and passionate person about the competencies. She did it. She does a lot on this. I learned that from her too. The relationship, what is the relationship that the client has to that situation? And I think that's it's a hard frame for me to get my head around. I like it, but I can't say it's natural for me to think of it that way, but I love playing with that. What is your relationship to this situation, or how do you view that? Yeah. I don't know. How do you feel about it, Connie?
Well, I shake it out, but I don't ask that direct question. But I just, when they present with whatever they're presenting with, then I just try to look and think and go to for questions that are closer to that. You know, I mean, I had a potential client yesterday. We're going to talk today. He said, I have ADHD and I'm just going to have to make myself do this. Right. And so it was like, I just got like, oh no. And he said, yes, he's on meds. He's diagnosed, but I don't want to get us derailed here. But I just, you know, that's where a little panic sets in sometimes around that, because it really is the who.
Yeah. What do you do in that moment then when the person says that?
I don't know what I did, but because it was just frenetic, where he's just going to force himself and make himself. So it's further conversation around how to kind of get around that.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's just humanity. That's what's happening, and that's true for him. And so what I would do is that's where I'd stay, right present there. Perhaps first of all, I would just let him know I heard him.
Mm-hmm.
I hear this is challenging for you. Thanks for being honest about where you're at with your meds and ADHD or whatever. How do you want me to coach you?
Mm.
How do you need me to work with you, knowing what you know about yourself?
Yeah.
So my first thing would be humanity. That's the human showing up, and I have to coach that person and just be empathetic. Again, toward MCC, this is what often happens. We don't get taught this because it's not really taught out there, MCC skill level. But what most of my clients who come to me for mentoring at that level find is they go, oh my gosh, you've given me permission to be human. Because I don't know why, but ACTPs focus so much on the what, and there's a lot of great coach training programs out there that are somatic and full being and ontological and all of that. But so much of the time we just get this what focus, what, and expert model, and we forget that this is a human being, and the more we can bring our humanity and being empathetic and being curious about, this person knows a lot about themselves. If they're frenetic, for instance, what do you do? How do you work with your frenetic? I notice your, I'd call it frenetic energy. How do you, what do you describe this as that you're experiencing right now? Okay. What do you know about yourself that would help you with this? If this was of use to you instead of it's something you're forcing yourself to do, what would make this the most valuable experience for you? Yeah, okay, you're being told you need to do this. I understand. That's important. But what's more important is what are you going to make out of this for yourself? I often have those people show up too. I don't have as many anymore because I just refuse to have, I'm not saying yours is, Connie, but the remedial coaching. I'm just tired of that is companies saying, this person needs to improve. No, companies are systems. If you pick one person out and say they're the problem, you're the problem. The problem is the system, not just one problem in a system. So I'm really just done with that type of coaching at this point. So anyway, Connie, what do you feel about what I've said? What does that bring to you?
Oh, thank you. Thank you for modeling good coaching. So yes, I really like where, and I took notes on where is to ask him, how do you want me to coach you? And really not just, yeah, how do you want me to coach you? And knowing yourself, what would be the best way, et cetera. So I really appreciate that. Thank you.
Great. I'm glad you brought it forward, Connie. Anyone else have some thoughts or ponderings that you want to bring forward? I do love owls. Don't you just want to scratch them and just hug them? And I just want to touch these little things. Just want one. Another day. All right, so here's a couple of, I pulled this out of one of my other PowerPoints. I couldn't find how to just copy and paste this into this PowerPoint. I've got a couple of mindset shifts here, just trust and intimacy, some distinctions between ACC to PCC to MCC. I think I've already alluded to them, but these are different languages. At ACC, coaches attached to own performance and trusting client and client's abilities is in the background. The coach is aiming for safe space for the client to speak, but more from a sort of having everything like a really strict process follow and questions you ask. So that's where we start. You have to start it. Bouncing the ball on the court. You got to start with being able to do that first. And then when you move to PCC, the coach is creating a space of safety where the client can speak more about themselves. There is a degree of trust and connected relationship with the client. So you're moving into the who. And then for MCC, really with the trust level, which is all more about the who, the coach demonstrates complete trust in the client's ability and intimacy arises from the mutual state of learning. So you're more curious about this person. Coach allows self to connect and be with the humanity of the client. So you move it from the who first to the what. I say the who first and the what will follow. This is really confusing for a lot of coaches when I first say that, but trust the process. Once you get an experience of your presence and your curiosity and being present to the human being, actually getting quicker results and transformational results, you'll like this type of coaching. It's so much easier than being an expert. All right, so I'm aware we've got not so much time left, so I want to make sure I address this. What about the business case for credentialing, and why is it important? What challenges do you encounter selling coaching into organizations? What do you find is the challenge you have, if any, or common ones you hear? Part of what I was going to do today is talk about this. So Connie and Joy, maybe when you ask me to speak a little on this, what's your context or thoughts that would help here?
So what's coming up for me is, and I can talk directly to this from my own experience, when you're working with organizations that are not naturally learning organizations yet, or they're looking at their human capital in a way that doesn't necessarily clue me in, or does clue me in on where they are in the evolutionary growth curve. Where I guess I'm going to is, how might we, of course, you almost have to meet them where they are in the system, right? And to help evolve that thinking through concrete examples, impact, ROI, all of that. So that's sort of where I'm coming from. But Connie, I think when we were talking, and I could be wrong here, so please step in, it was, what's the case for continuing the mastery and growth? Point of PCC, like, I'm good. And then there's this other piece, which is, no, hell with the three letters at the end of your name. Are you willing and ready to aspire to lifetime growth and mastery? So I've said a lot, but I think that was sort of a conversation that we were having.
Yes. Can somebody mute McHenry here?
Well, and yes, with the credentialing in Dublin, we did hear that they are going to really be focusing on business and corporate messaging, because business and corporate is confused about coaching. However, the ones that are familiar with it are starting to require credentials. So like the federal government, most of them is you have to be a PCC or you're not going to even be considered. And so the goal for ICF Global is to start educating. And so for here, and I talk to different coaches that have done well, and they just hear stories about, oh, I'm just not going to get an MCC. I just don't want it. And I really feel that it's so vital that people keep trying and keep working. I mean, I'm an example of somebody that's worked really hard on this, and I'm in the waiting, the wings of the waiting. But what's the business case for people to continue moving with credentialing and not get into inertia and not stall out?
Wonderful. Thanks both Joy and Connie for that. Yeah. Well, there are a lot of people that come to me for mentoring who are ACC skill level, who work inside companies, who are line managers and or HR people or whatever, who want to know about coaching, but they're not in a position to do a lot of coaching. So the more that those people come to coach training to be educated on what coaching is, then they get to know about the ICF, and then they have a standard, and now they realize that at least this means there's a foundational standard of core competencies. So some of them, like some of the big companies in the world, now require you to have a credential, at least at PCC, to coach in their companies. And that's because they now have educated people who have gone through coach training who are not coaches, but they know about coaching and they know about the ICF. And as has been said, some in DC, I know ICF has done some good work there to educate the government sector on credentialing and competencies and having a foundational standard. So you being able to talk to standards with your clients, potential clients, about competencies, and that also being able to talk about the difference between coaching, consulting, teaching, training, mentoring, and that coaching is an empowering process of drawing out I call it, self-knowledge about the person or team in order to become better at and excel as people in their organizations. However, they are whole people. So how do you coach the whole person in the company context? Well, that's the who. And I usually go, person who's bringing me in for potential coaching, do you have any problems at home, like I did with you? Do you have any people you're concerned about? Well, so do all of the people who work with you. They go, yeah, I know. So how do you bring the humanity? And the coaching is going to be about what's important for this person as well in order to be able to be the best they can be for you. So you have to find your own language and way of having those conversations with these people up front. Then the other part of becoming and moving along from ACC to PCC to MCC, hopefully I've given you an insight today in the value of going through the process. I'm actually about to co-lead a PCC Marcus training, which is great for the ICF starting in May. Another cohort. I was part of cohort 1 and I'm leading cohort 16. That's so amazing to think it was that long ago. And it's amazing how all these people wanting to learn about this skill set so that they can take it into their coaching training organizations around the world. And they also, a lot of them also then want to become MCCs as well. And they get the value of, say, the PCC markers and start to say, wow, this is really amazing that you start to coach the person. And others go, yeah, well, of course we coach the whole person. What I found when I became MCC is that I didn't even know that I would get new opportunities. What I did it for is because I'm a learner and I love learning and I want to be the best coach for the rest of my life. And that's a continual process. And I want to be the best coach I can be so I can be of best value to my client. I'm a student of coaching. I'm in training, coaching. I'm a student in a learning about the art of developmental coaching right now. I learn. I love learning so that I can be a better person, coach to my clients. But back in 2006, so I'd been an MCC for a couple of years, again, somebody who knew me from Wharton Business School, so I used to live in Philadelphia when I first came to the US from Australia for a year before my husband and I moved out to California in 2002. Anyway, it was a personal connection, but she was asked, who do you know who might be interested in doing some coaching for our company? We have a big client and we need someone who's very experienced. And so we're looking for somebody who already has really good coaching skills. So she went, okay, Carly. So they put me forward. There were 20 people who were put forward. We were taken to San Jose for a weekend after they said, yes, you're in the final 20. We're looking for 4 people, this consulting firm that had a coaching contract. And had to coach, I had to train, I had to lead up front. I'm not very good at leading up front of the room, so I didn't think I had any chance. And they said, well, your coaching skills are pretty good and you have an MCC, so we know you've had a lot of experience in terms of your hours. We can hear that you have good coaching skills. We're putting you straight into Google to coach. And I end up coaching for 2.5 years in Google. That ended up being a $250,000 coaching contract for me. I did a bit of other coaching. It was 95%, 90% coaching at Google across teams without direct authority as well as direct authority. And I wasn't even given that opportunity because they said, we know your skill level. And to be honest, just because you have 2,500 hours of coaching hours doesn't mean you're a good coach. So then they had to listen to my skills and that. A lot of people are in really just bad habits because they get into training, teaching, consulting, mentoring, rather than building their coaching skills muscle and then having coaching and mentoring, training, all of those other things as a secondary set. Knowing when to bring in your expertise is really important. When you say you're coaching, how do you know you're coaching versus defaulting to those other hats? So anyway, that's my personal experience. I have some other stories where I got, even at PCC, when I got my PCC, I was given an opportunity to work with 50, I ended up working with 50 different financial advising firms. I got a contract because I could work on them. Who are they? So that the marketing messages could be congruent with who they are. So I did all the coaching was on the who they are and what's different about them than the other thousands of financial consulting firms. Does that help?
Yes. Yes and yes. I can't speak for everyone, but Joy Lubeck took a lot of notes. I guess I wanted to just take a moment and ask if there's any final questions. We're not only good at starting on time, but we want to honor everyone's end. One tradition that we have that I'd like to invite us all into is just a moment for appreciation to you, Carly. And so if there's anyone that would like to just explain a little bit about what maybe resonated with them that really supports them going forward, just a brief moment, I'd love for you to come off mute.
Carly, this is Jeff. I'll say it was great to reconnect with you after having your visit us a few years ago. And I love the way that you've made the competencies approachable and useful as far as how we can start with presence and then expand out. And I really, again, that's kind of where I'm at right now, but I really appreciate the focus you're putting, that you're bringing back to me around the being part and the who part and how to take that to the next level. So thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Anyone else?
I'd like to give thanks because I think you introduced a lot of concepts, and of course I related to many of the things you were talking about, but I think that will also help me in the future, give me a lot of good tips to help with my clients. Thank you.
Thanks, Janet.
Hi, this is Denise. I just truly enjoyed your authenticity, Carly. It was nice. It was refreshing.
Thanks. I can only be me.
Andrea has one final question. Hang on one second. Let me get to it. What are some motivations and or business case? Oh, no, you already did. So you already answered that, I guess.
Yeah, if you don't do corporate coaching, I think that was the question there.
Yes,
that's
right. Yeah.
I don't know. For me, you never know. I am open to all good things happening. And I get, like, here I am speaking to you. That's been, 5 years since I've spoken to the ICF chapter. It's because I'm MCC. I don't go out looking for places to go speak, but there are so many good things that come your way when you continue your growth and learning for yourself. And it's a path to mastery. Is if you go for your MCC and you don't get it, my gosh, if you're with the right mentors, and there's a lot of good mentors out there toward MCC, you're going to learn a lot and you're going to be a happier, better person. And if you are in a better place with your coaching skills, I don't know what's going to show up. It doesn't have to be corporate coaching. Who knows what may come your way? The concept is, are you still growing your coaching skills? And are you still continuing to model? Have your own coach. If you haven't had your own coach for at least 6 continuous months, I'm going to assert you're not congruent as a coach. You don't know what coaching has done for you. Because I can't tell you, no one can take away my personal experience of what having a coach for the first solid 2.5-3 years of my, I live with a coach. I'm married to a coach, an MCC. I am so privileged and honored, but I still have people out there that I will work with as a coach. But congruence is such an important part. If you stop at ACC and say, I'm done, maybe you won't get any more clients that are beyond that. They're at that level where you're at.
Beautiful. So I'd like to just offer your comment about permission to break the rules.
Yeah.
I loved that. I'm very anti-establishment, so it resonated very highly. And the other piece, which is nothing is wrong, everything is possible. And that we need to trust that. And really this piece around knowing that they are whole and resourceful human beings and trusting the process and moving ourselves into that space. Thank you for that. Thank you. Connie, any final gratitude to Carly from you?
Well, thank you, Carly. And I'll just show you what I have here. I have right here, look at the core competencies. It's at a 36 by 24. and I have it right here at my left hand. And I went, I got it, and I got it posted on a foam board because I just want to live and breathe them because I know how valuable they are. And when I use them, my clients are just thrilled. I mean, it works. So anyway, thank you, Carly, for being here. I really appreciate it. And I took a lot of notes too. So thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. Thanks for all showing up, and may you be the best person you can be today and work toward being a better person tomorrow.
Yes. Thank you, Derek Hill.
Beautifully said. Thank you to everyone who joined us. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Do you want to stay on the call for a minute, Connie and Joy, and just stop the recording?
Sure.
That